And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to a Friday edition of The Low Post podcast, day two of no basketball games, which means it's date night in the Low household, baby. Crack open a bottle of wine. Let's go out to a restaurant like normal people and prime ourselves for the conference finals, which will start on Sunday. And we previewed the first round together. I thought it would be wonderful to preview the semifinal round together with the great David Thorpe. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Zach, and very excited to be talking about some pretty amazing basketball we're about to see, I think.
I know you're not you don't drink much, but what's your go-to wine? Give me an idea for tonight.
If I'm drinking red wine, I like a good Pinot. My wife likes Pinot Grigio, or something white. I like the red stuff, but no, I enjoy a fine cocktail, old fashions, martinis. Yeah, I'm old school.
Okay. Never been my bag. I'll see what I can do. I got to ask Griff. That's the wine expert in the NBA.
Yeah, correct.
Before we get to the Western Conference Finals, which is a series that we've been waiting all year for, Dwayne Casey just got fired. I've been up in Toronto a lot this year, so I have thought for many years. Actually, I have thoughts. You know Masai very well. You and he were both sort of early conduits for your involvement and his involvement in the NBA. I don't remember the exact story off the top of my head, but I know you guys are tight. Did this surprise you? And sort of what were your this literally happened 20 minutes ago. So what are your initial thoughts?
No, it definitely did surprise me, only because I don't care that he won, you know, someone's coach of the year. That doesn't have any relevance to me. But why he won, it has relevance, and that he was a top seed with a team that certainly had a solid starting group with a rookie in it, and then an amazing bench full of young guys that I don't think most coaches would have utilized. And he also changed the way they played, and I thought that went well for them. Clearly it did. So I'm a little – that part surprised me. On the other hand, I think that there are some guys, Zach, speaking as a professional coach, I think that some guys do a great job of building a culture and building a design and the system and then even instituting the system and getting it to execute. Others are better at managing a game. I don't think Casey's strength was managing a game. I think it's clear that he was very successful in the other part of it, but they're now a point where they got to figure out how to win games like the guys in Boston are doing. And Brad's just better than almost anyone at managing the game and finding ways to win no matter what his talent is. And I think they're looking for a guy like that with what looks like a pretty damn good roster going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because – well, it's interesting on lots of different levels, right? I mean, Masai is one of the only GMs who has ever fired a coach of the year. And, I'm talking about the media voted coach of the year. We don't know who's going to win that.
Right.
But it might happen again. And then he left Denver before hiring, George Karl's successor. And so one of the great questions that the league has been asking for 5 years now is when he gets to put a stamp on a team by hiring the coach, what's he looking for? Who's he going to go for? And the follow-up to that is, I wonder, you know, first of all, he has two or three really qualified assistants on his staff in Nick Nurse, Rex Kalamian, and Jerry Stackhouse. If he goes outside, the kind of coach he hires might be an indication of whether this is step one of a teardown or whether this is we think we're good enough to change the coach and not the players and roll it back next year, right?
Yeah, so obviously great insight. It would be so surprising to me for a full teardown when they did just win the one seed. And I know that there's some issues with that roster going forward and money and all of that, but there's no reason to think this team can't at least compete. There's no question what LeBron does, and then looking at holy cow, Boston and Philadelphia is going to be really good these next 4 or 5 years. And I'm sure that played into his mindset, Zach. I think that he realizes we can't just improve by small increments against those monsters that we're about to see a bunch going forward. I think that one thing I know from Masai well, and it's evident when you look at what, how the roster is built and who they've drafted, just look at his background, right? He's the first ever non-North American-born general manager in any American professional sport.
And by the way, I love that, and I love that he uses his platform and his background, has used it to speak out on social issues. I think that's been awesome, and I just it just popped into my head when you mentioned his background, so please continue.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the whole point. So if he's just willing to take guys. I think he's much more interested in the global perspective than some of our more provincial coaches that we have, some of the more old-school guys especially. Obviously, the league's a third foreign anyway, and I think I haven't looked at Masai's roster from that perspective, but they probably are going to be more than a third going forward, which is just a reflection of how we see the world, which is smart. That's exactly how we should be doing it. And the league at some point, if it's 50-50, wouldn't surprise me one bit. You know, when my kid maybe is working for a team one day, it might be 50-50 as it would make sense. So he'll look at that. Hiring from within makes sense. Actually, all three names are interesting. And I've heard Sackhouse being named a lot. I know that Masai is more of a disciplinarian than his mild-mannered kind of pace when he talks would suggest. He knows how to be yelled at. He's seen me coach. When I first kind of brought him into America, in a sense, I met him at the Final Four, and this story's been told a bunch. But he worked a lot for me when he just had finished his career. And he knows that I got on guys, and I don't care if they were professional, and he loved it. It was so natural for him. So he's not afraid of a guy that's a taskmaster, but I also think he wants someone that knows how to connect. And the biggest thing might be, Zach, what I would call an agile mind. And here's the easiest little snapshot I just want to paint with you, one simple thing. You remember LeBron's shot made at the end of Game 3, which basically ended the series.
Yes.
It was so evident to anyone watching that the Raptors had decided just to hug their man and stay home. And I think Kevin Arnold has talked to you about this the other day. And LeBron, being a brilliant basketball player, realized, okay, they're just going to stay home on their guy. That means I got to go one-on-one, which allowed him to put 100% of his brilliant focus on just making a shot. There was no thought of faking, stunting the help, gap help in recovery, or actually maybe going to double and then get a rotation. I don't know what would have worked, but doing nothing was not smart. And that was where a coach, it's not about just practice, Zach. It's about in that timeout telling guys, hey, we're all going to stay home, but don't let LeBron know you're staying home. Watch that tape again. Watch how C.J. Miles is standing like a statue on Korver in the corner. You can't do that against LeBron James. And a guy that's managing a game, that small little nuance will make a difference and create some kind of doubt in LeBron's mind. Maybe he would choose poorly. Probably not. But what you can't do is do nothing. And I think that probably pissed Masai off, among other things that happened during the year. He's going to find a guy that's going to manage those nuances better.
So I want to make something very, very clear. I have not talked to anybody in the Raptors front office since the series ended, nor have I talked to them all year about the possibility of changing coaches. So I want to make that clear, because they had a great season. I wasn't going to talk to them about that during the season. It's just not okay. And I don't think Dwayne deserves to be fired. And I also don't think that that's the correct question to ask. Because no one that wins 59 games in a number one seed, quote unquote, deserves to be fired. So I want to make all that clear. This is not sourced. This is not insight in that sense. I was sitting there in Toronto watching Game 2 when Kevin Love posted up C.J. Miles 4 or 5 times in a row without help, without any adjustment. Yeah. And I literally wrote in my notes, this is going to get Dwayne fired. Because I know Masai well enough to know he's sitting somewhere in the back watching that not being thrilled about it. And that's the kind of game management that I think if Dwayne had a weakness, it's like they were lucky that the damage of Valanciunas guarding Love. And by the way, JV had a great offensive series. Great offensive series. They were lucky that they had no shot guarding any of that basic Korver, Love, two-man game off the ball with JV in the game. Their only shot was pray they miss, and they got lucky. I think they only quote-unquote allowed like 116 points per 100 possessions with Love and JV matched up, which was worse when they had other matchups on Love, but it doesn't matter. 116 is awful, and it could have been 130 with like even average to above average shooting. I just remember watching that game and thinking, being sad, because I just felt that it's the kind of sequence that sticks in a GM's mind forever.
Yeah, well, obviously, I hadn't looked at it from that point of view. I can tell you that I had a similar feeling, though, at the end of Game 1, and I thought about it last night, coincidentally, 2 nights ago, watching Celtics-Sixers Game 5, because think about that Sixers-Celtics ending. If Philly comes back and wins that game, I mean, you and I are maybe, I don't know if we're talking or not, but if we are, we're saying, Philly might freaking take this thing now.
I still don't know how Boston pulled that game out. Boston is pulling these games out of its shamrock. It's unbelievable how they're doing it.
Right. So I agree. So in that context, I'm watching Boston kind of lose it, and And then you look at Brad Stevens, and it's like he's getting his hair done at the salon. He's so poised and calm. And I thought his guys, while not playing great, weren't losing their minds. And I quickly contrasted that to the memory I had, the visual memory I have, of how the Raptors looked like they were playing with their hair on fire at the end of game one, where they just, when, at some point when you can't tip the ball in, Zach, this is from a coach talking here, grab the ball and throw it back out, or use a couple shot fakes and go dunk on the guy and make him foul you. And if he blocks that, he blocks it. But what I'm not going to let my guys do over and over again is tip and miss when we're trying to close out game one against LeBron. And I never thought any of that urgency from the coach was coming from a confidence standpoint. If anything, was more of a histrionic or panic. And so I didn't think he'd get fired, but I, like you, had better insight in that. But I did wonder, like, has he just reached his ceiling? Not that he can't get better going forward. When you're in the moment, you have to do something as a leader. Brad, to me, is as much of the epitome of that as anyone that we've seen in the league for quite some time, because his guys, they're just not going to ever look at Brad and think, oh, man, he's panicked. And players do think that. They do look at their coach, because I know, when you know too, they'll say, man, coach was panicking. No Celtics guy in the last 3 years has ever said that. And I think that's what the Raptors could have used in game one. Look at it this way. If Stevens is coaching just game one of that Raptors-Cavs series, Raptors are up 1-0. That's
so,
for sure.
Here's how I would put it. I think Dwayne Casey is a really good coach. I think he did a really good job. I think if he wants to, he'll get hired again quickly.
I agree.
Maybe not this summer, because sometimes that doesn't happen the first time around, even for the very best coaches.
Right.
Also a great man, which it's almost strange to me how many people feel the need to say that, because it indicates that criticism of his coaching is going to come next. But I've told Dwayne this over text, like, when I think of sort of the kind of man that I admire and aspire to be, like, just as a human being in the NBA, I often think of him. However, all that said, I don't think this is like a disgrace. I think Masai is within his rights to look at how they've lost 10 games in a row to Cleveland and think, you know what? If we're going to keep this roster together, or if salaries and circumstances demand that we keep this roster together, I think maybe we can find a coach who will do a little better matching up with Cleveland. And in terms of, like, minute by minute adjustments, I also want to say I see a lot of, like, oh, well, if they make one of those tip-ins, like, Dwayne's all of a sudden a coaching genius, and like, what, is this how we're really making decisions? No, that's not how Toronto is making this decision. And also, linked to that, I don't want to hear about how they were a tip-in and a LeBron buzzer beater away from winning two of those games, because they lost the other two by 9,000 points, okay? You're not going to win every game, and against LeBron, not even half the games that come down to the last 30 seconds. You're just not going to. How about this? How about win a game by 8? How about win just a normal game, so we don't have to play these semantic, these games. Oh, if this tip went in, and if they doubled it, just win a normal game. The Pacers won 3 of them, including one by 30. It's possible. Just win a normal game instead of Ed. So I guess, like, 10 straight is a problem. 10 straight is a problem, and some of the X's and O's were a little bit of a problem. And I don't think Dwayne deserves to be fired. I think Dwayne's a really good coach. I'm going to miss dealing with him up there. I just think that they're within their rights of to say, let's see what happens with a different voice, particularly if we're going to have a hard time trading the players. It's a very complicated question. That's the best I can do expressing how I feel.
You did a great job, Zach. And I just to add this last thing, if they keep the roster together this year, you could coach the team to 40 wins or so. They are a very, very sound group of guys that play on both ends. But he doesn't want to just win 40 or 45. The risk to me is very low if they're going to keep the group together. The reward is great, because if you end up finding him, he might have a name, or he might really want to talk to a lot of people. I haven't talked to him either about it. The last time we talked, it wasn't even on the radar. If he thinks he can find a guy that can do what Brad does, that can do what some of these, you know, Rick Carlisle, some of the better coaches on court, and it can buy him a little bit more upside, what I call elasticity in the talent of the team, to be able to manufacture what you said is really the most important thing. We know close games are 50-50 games, and they just lost two of those. The whole goal of the best team, the reason why we know you're the best team, is you are winning games by 8, 9, 10, 12 points. That point margin thing is the whole key. And you need to come up with a strategy to beat the Cavaliers by 10, 12 points. You've got to be up 10 with two to play so you can relax a little bit. And if they find the right guy with that roster, because that roster can grow. with those young guys. They can
the
get
young guys
better.
Are yeah, they're going to get better. All those guys are going to get better. DeMar's in his prime. Kyle's the one guy who age will take a bite out of him at some point, but it hasn't yet. And I think again, to Dwayne's credit, I think limiting his minutes and resting him a little bit down the stretch clearly worked. So
and Van Vliet has got some, I think, a considerable amount of talent. Remember, there was a period of time in the first few years of his career where Kyle Lowry was never seen as even a starter. Like, all-star, not even close. Like, when I first started running some pro stuff at IMG, I got down there my first year, I think it was 07, and some of the NBA balls they had had chips in them. And I'm like, guys, I can't use these basketballs, you know, for these NBA guys coming in. And they said, well, those are Kyle Lowry's balls. I said, well, I didn't take them with him. He's like, no. What we mean is he was working on a three all offseason. He kept hitting the side of the backboard because he could not shoot when he came out of Villanova. So what they did with him is great. Those young guys, they have Van Vliet in particular. He's got some potential to be a similar kind of player. What I mean is they've got guys waiting in the wings to step up. That team can get better. The problem is Boston is going to get considerably better. Philadelphia is going to get considerably better. It might be a three-team battle, plus we don't know what LeBron's doing. I have no idea. And so I agree with you. It's not just well within Masai's rights. He's helped build two teams to a pretty strong place. Let's assume he has a plan in place. He normally does.
Now, that said, this is the first time he's hired a coach in the NBA as the number one guy in charge. Get it right. Got to get it right.
Yeah. Because if he ripped the Band-Aid off. He owns it now, right?
That's if you don't get this one right. Now, he's got infinite job security, I think. I mean, this is the greatest era in the history of Raptors basketball, which is a low bar, but they've been quite good for a long time now. And he's been elevated multiple times. They know that other teams will try and hire him if they ever stop extending his contract and giving him raises, blah, blah, blah. But this is a big bullet. And you only get to fire it so many times unless you're Ernie Grunfeld or Del Demps. You know what I mean? Like, who can't ever die. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I don't want to talk too much more about it because the series that we've been waiting for since, I don't know, the moment that Chris Paul got traded to Houston, I guess, is finally happening. And you and I have both been watching film the last couple days in preparation for this. And I just think this is going to be awesome. I know that it's popular to say, oh, we're all getting hyped up for no reason. The Warriors are just going to roll. The Warriors are 24-3 in their last 27 playoff games since KD signed.
They weren't playing the Rockets in those games.
Yeah, fine. The Rockets are 50-5 with Capella, Harden, and Paul. They're built to play this team tough. Even if this is a 5 or 6 game series, I expect the Rockets to push the Warriors harder than any team has pushed them since they signed Durant, and maybe harder than any team has pushed them other than the finals that they lost to Cleveland. I get why people think the Warriors are just going to roll. I've even seen people say, well, who cares? Home court doesn't matter. Home court matters. It matters that Houston has games 1 and 7 at home. It just does. So I'm excited, and I hope you're excited. And I want to start by just asking you, as you look at the lineups, the matchups, the schemes, the styles, whatever, what jumps out at you is the most interesting question you have when that series finally tips off and we get a couple of set possessions and you see what the plans are and who they want to guard who and what the strategies are going to be. What are you most curious about?
There's two things. One is on the Warriors side, how Steph does against anyone he's guarding. Eric Gordon is extraordinarily willing to shoot the three. I think he's top four or so in three attempts this year. He is also a bull of an athlete and an athlete. He is not a guy that you can just rest easy against. He also is willing to cut off the ball without it. And Chris Paul is pretty freaking great. And so Steph is going to be challenged, I think, in a way not to mention James Harden, of course, but they're not going to put him on Harden a whole lot. He'll have to guard him some in transition, whatever else. So that, you know, I always say energy is a finite thing, Zach, in any one game. That is going to take its toll, what he's going to have to do defensively against those guys. And the second thing I look at is, and there's a lot of variables, obviously, and I'm curious all the things you're going to say, but I just wonder, I'm so impressed with Clint Capella. I have been since the very first game I saw him in preseason as a rookie. His ability to play downhill on short rolls, if the Warriors decide to hard hedge ball screens or blitz ball screens and Capella just short rolls and then makes an easy play, he can't shoot the ball the way Amari used to do for the Suns when they used to do that, but he can play downhill and Eurostep and score. He finishes great. and he makes the easy pass out to shooters. I don't know that the Warriors can play big. In fact, I almost probably think they can't because they can't defend the three when one of the centers on the floor. But the Rockets can, and Capella is a problem for Golden State, which is why I think it's got a great chance to go. Like you said, is right. It could be a couple of shots at the buzzer, and one team wins it, and they end up winning the series by five. But this looks like a sixer game in the same series. I think these teams are incredibly even.
I'm willing to be wrong. Like, the Warriors are awesome. I picked the Warriors in six. I think they're better. Clearly, they have a gear that they've been saving all year. They've been futzing around. I mean, Iguodala decided to snore through the whole regular season.
Right, that's the gear. He decided to play now.
Yeah, and so maybe they just roll them. Maybe they win. Maybe it's a sweep. Maybe it's they win every game by 15. I just don't see that. I don't see that happening. I don't even know where to start with your guy. So Curry, obviously, everyone's going to look at Curry's knee. He looked good towards the end of the New Orleans series. He shot it very well in the last game. I don't think he's looked quite peak, like twitchy. You know, the twitchy step backs and all that. And some of this series will be how much separation can he get when Capella switches onto him on the pick and roll? And can he hit those step back threes that became his trademark? And we haven't seen as many of those this year. Teams have gotten better at taking them away. They're really hard shots. And as you said, Capella's really good. The two lineup questions that you just brought up right off the bat is, are the Warriors going to play a center? How much are they going to play a center? Can their centers do anything in this series? My bet is that they're going to start Looney in game one. I've tried to get out of them. No one will tell me I've tried. But my bet is they're going to start Looney only because it seems like a Steve Kerr kind of thing to do. Let's get a body on Capella. Let's make sure, like, we're not a super deep team because for reasons that only a couple of people understand, half their roster are centers. So if we start Iguodala and go whole hog with that lineup, like, we just don't got a lot of guys on the bench who aren't centers. And if it's a problem, then we adjust from there in games 2, 3, 4, whatever. So I bet they're going to start Looney. But my problem with Looney is, like, the kind of centers that play against the Rockets and against Harden and Paul either have to be able to switch or have to be able to sit back at the rim like Gobert and Pau Gasol did it very well last year. And I just don't think any of Golden State centers can do that. And so I'm just not sure what purpose they serve. And if you counter by saying, well, they can just guard PJ Tucker and you can put Draymond on Capella. So if you're guarding Looney, if you're guarding Tucker with Looney, what's the point? Like, why is he on the floor? Who cares? So I don't know but I think that's a very interesting question, the center question.
Well, I would only add one more thing to if you want to play against the Rockets as a big, the third skill you have to have is you have to be able to think extraordinarily quickly because they're going to make you think. You know, they're going to isolate and everything goes to a complete stop. And then they send one guy in motion, two guys in motion, someone sets a veer screen, someone runs some floppy action, and the ball's in Harden's hands at the same time, and defenses freak out. Because if they got to now figure out what they're going to do because the shot's going to be up in the next 3 or 4 seconds when Harden starts playing downhill. And you've got to be able to read and react quickly. And I do not trust Kevin Looney to be doing that. I think most of the time Green will be playing at center. Because one thing people forget about Draymond, and I've said this for a few years now, he's the quickest thinking defensive big we have in the game. It's why he's the best helper. The reason why he's the best helper, Zach, is because he sees what's going on instantly. Almost as if as the guy with the ball decides what he's going to do, Draymond reads it just as fast. It's an incredible gift. Guys like Magic and Bird were similar, but they just weren't as defensive-minded. So Draymond is that brilliant thinker out there, and that's why he's going to be out there, because he'll read that stuff. Looney isn't in the same stratosphere that way, but Pachulia and McGee, I mean, they might as well just bring, you know, they can wear their nice shoes. I just don't see how you can play them much, because the fear that you have against Houston is that three ball. They made 18 threes in the last game. I've always said, I think 18 to 22 is that number where if they get to that number of maids, they're going to win that game. Well, they only need to do one or two of them and to take a series because they can still beat you without doing that, as they proved against Utah, who is not as good as Golden State, I know. So that to me is a big question. I didn't mention the Curry injury just because I just have no idea. But I love how you put it with twitchy. That's super, super important for us to watch early. He's got to be at his best. And I want to throw this out right now before I forget. It's going to sound super dumb, but the X factor that I look at when I see Golden State play is Durant, which is, of course, he's the biggest factor. But he's an X factor because he's the one guy that can't be guarded. He's the one guy that, almost like LeBron, just not quite the passer, obviously. You can't contest him. He's too talented in every way, shape, and form offensively. He doesn't have to pick on your worst defensive player. He can pick on your best one. And if he's just rolling, the Warriors are going to put up big numbers. As good as Houston's defense is, they're going to have to try to stop it. And if they send too many resources, he's too willing of a passer. And the Warriors pass too easily also for guys like, you know, Curry and Thompson not to kill you. So if Durant's just going nuts, that's to me when Golden State might run away. But I just don't expect that to happen. It's not going to be four games. It might be a game or two. That's why I think it's going to go six or seven if he can't do it for every game. But he's the one guy they can't account for, I don't think.
Yeah, he's the trump card, and he's the reason why I'm going to pick the Warriors.
Yeah, I agree.
However, they do have three guys who can legitimately at least make him see like a fingertip when he rises up to like Drew Holiday. It might as well have been a tree stump. Like, it didn't matter. And Drew Holiday's good. In Bamute, Tucker, and Ariza. And I think one of the interesting subplots of the series is can Houston get away with any minutes against the Warriors' best lineups without having at least two of those guys on the floor? And how often are they going to have to play all three? And how much does that hurt their sort of collective shooting quotient? But back to the center thing. This is, I never thought in my wildest dreams I would ever say this, and it's going to be wrong. Of all the Warriors centers, other than, I guess, Looney, who has proven a little bit more adaptable and smarter and sort of nimbler? Is it more nimble or nimbler, Coach?
Yeah, more agile.
I don't, but is it nimble? Do you say more nimble or nimbler?
I would say more nimble, yes, but I'm not an expert. I'm a basketball coach.
Okay. I hope Steve doesn't actually try this. I wonder if JaVale, who I don't trust as far as I can shove him to do anything on a basketball court, I wonder if he could mimic the just like if Pau Gasol, who's a much smarter player, can do it. I wonder if he could mimic the just, hey, buddy, just stand at the rim.
Yeah.
Like, tag Capella and just put your arms up because you're really big and you can jump high and see what happens. Like Pachulia. When they played Pachulia at center, he hard-hedged pick and rolls against Harden. Like, you can't do that against the Rockets. That's death. Like, that's over. They start playing 4-on-3, you're done. So anyway, but back to Durant. I agree with you, he's the trump card, because as fun as the Warriors are to watch, I can almost see this series becoming a slow-down Rocket series where the Warriors play Draymond at the 5 and the Rockets play whoever, Capella or Tucker at the 5, and both teams switch everything. And it just ends up being a hunt-the-mismatch game where the Rockets are searching out Curry on one end and the Warriors are searching out Harden or whoever on the other end. And on the surface, that seems like Houston's kind of game, but that's the kind of game that Durant is really well-suited to play, and that's the reason that the Warriors signed Durant. And I think they can play that game as well as the Rockets can, and any other kind of game, an open court game, a game of sort of when they get their split cuts and all that moving and they're cutting and passing, they're better at that kind of stuff. So, but I have this weird feeling that this is going to, that this series is going to be played at more of the Rockets tempo. Does that, any of that make sense?
It all makes sense. There's so many interesting nuances that we can watch for too, because as slow as this thing might end up going, one of the things that Harden loves to do is advance the ball with hit-ahead passes to save energy on possessions. So you'll see his guys race out, even though they know he pretty much wants to play slow-down isolation. If the Warriors fall asleep in their defensive transition, he will throw that long pass to whether it's Emmamute or Ariza, you know, Gordon flying down, and they'll shoot the three or go to the basket. The problem for Houston is the Warriors just got done running the Indy 500, racing the Indy 500. So it's already in their culture now just to race back because the Pelicans flew up and down the court. And so that may force a little more energy expense from Harden, which is a valuable thing to look at. I think that when you talk about those bodies on Durant, I kind of suspect that we'll see some Chris Paul on him if
he
has the ball in the perimeter. Because to me, you almost can't contest Durant's shot almost no one can, but you can contest his dribble. And Chris Paul is such a dynamic on-ball defender, the way like the Pacers attacked Cleveland on the ball, which is what they do all the time. Chris Paul does that all the time too. You can make Durant uncomfortable. So what he'll do is he'll pass the ball, he'll run in the post, and they'll post Paul up, but they can switch out of that when just as he relieves the ball, they can switch it back over. That's a chess match thing that I'm looking to see. And remember that both teams have multiple guys that can do things with the ball, as opposed to just Harden always having the ball in his hands, which is one reason why they want to bring Chris Paul in. But I think they'd be making a mistake, Zach, if they don't try to run more, because these teams are a better defensive team. Well, Golden State's always been. Houston's a much better defensive team now, much, much better, in part because Capella's fantastic. And they've got other defenders, too, and Chris Paul, of course, is amazing, as he always has been. You need to try to get easy buckets and not just from turnovers. Of course, it'd be great to get them, but find guys that are a little lazy getting back on defense and take advantage of it. They'd be smart to play this game in the low hundreds as opposed to in the 90s or, you know, 103-100 game. I would say 105-112. Both teams should be looking to do that because that means they're generating some easy shots.
I think the Warriors should look to run, absolutely, and will look to run.
They're not as deep as they were. They used to be.
No, they're not, but they haven't played a lot of playoff games, and they've spent the entire year conserving
true.
Their energy.
That's
so
true.
I think they will and should run. And if you watch even Utah, who does not want to run, it's just not in their DNA and how they play, when Harden missed at the rim and Houston has two shooters in the corner and Capella on the floor, that means four guys are essentially below the restricted area. And every time that happened, whether it was a corner three miss or a Harden rim miss on a kickout, a Harden rim miss, they ran. And I think Houston has to be really, really careful at A, Harden better finish a lot of those plays, and B, one of those corner shooters has got to be out fast. Like, you can't wait around and see where the rebound goes. You can't stand there if you see your guy. You got to be out running towards half court. One of them. Not both, but one of them. And if they're not, that's just a little thing I'm watching, because the Warriors, if you let the Warriors get out and run 10, 15 times a game, you're dead. It's over. They're going to rain threes on you. And I think Houston gets a little sloppy with that. It's part of their schematic design. Like, they want shooters in the corner and they want Harden attacking the rim and they want Capella rim running.
Right.
As a coach, is there an answer for that? I mean, because it is sort of ingrained in how they play to have floor balance that can get a little shaky. Is there anything to do about that other than just someone get back?
Yeah, well, that's what it is, but it's when they get back. What they can't do is ball watch. The teaching point would be the millisecond where you take a shot, whoever's the opposite corner, or if it's from the middle, both corners, that millisecond the shot releases from the shooter's hands, you're flying back. I agree with you totally. You can't, that's why I thought both teams need to be opportunistic, because you can't give them easy shots because their offense are too good anyway in the half court. That's something to look out for. And I also wonder, I know you'll take notes during the game a lot, watching these previous games. I mean, the last game was what, late January? I swear to you, maybe you can ask Coach Kerr, I felt like in the most recent game, I don't think he even told his guys what defense to play. It was almost like, guys, do what you want to do, figure it out, talk a lot. I don't care if you switch this and hedge that, blitz this, because the last thing we want to do is show this team anything we might be thinking about doing when the games actually count in the spring. And they're gonna, I think, continue to tinker with both system and strategy and personnel. Like, I don't think either team really knows what can work because they haven't tried any of this. They're certainly gonna go with what other teams have done well against them and what they think their personnel works, but scrap it quickly. Because if you think you found a chink that you can exploit and it's not working and they get a 10-12-0 run, either team, I think you're in big trouble. So you better be super quick. That's what I go back to saying, an agile mind and also no pride. I don't care what your game plan is. Get out of it quickly. Both teams can roll the other team quickly and then move on to the next game. You know, defend the margin. Almost in this playoffs, I've written, I think on Twitter, it's like teams are 27-1, I think, now, if they've won at least one quarter by 10 points or more and never lost by more than 10. That sounds stupid to say, but the reality is you want to try to build that margin for an extended period and then defend it. And teams are 27-1 when they've done it, first, second, or third quarter, or fourth. It doesn't matter. And these teams, they won't just go up 10. You know, they can really roll you. So you've got to be smart about, okay, it's not working. We tried NA, it's not working. The one thing I'll throw out, we've talked about it a little bit. I just wonder, Zach, remember the Kawhi Leonard series when the Spurs just rolled Miami? I was shocked. Maybe you weren't, but I was.
I was. Although after game three, it was pretty clear that the tide had turned dramatically. I remember I was talking about that, actually. I think you were pretty confident it's over, like when it was 2-1. But to get to that point against the LeBron team, we were both shocked, yeah.
Right. I couldn't believe it. So I thought, I always pretended in my mind, I always imagined that Pop had said to Kawhi in a one-on-one talk, like before game one, hey, listen, Kawhi, LeBron James is the best player in the world. He's the best player on the court. We don't expect you over the course of any long period of time to be better than him. But screw it, man. Let's just go see if you can be for seven games, one play at a time. Just act like you're him. Take the three first 5 seconds of the offense if you're open. Attack them at the rim, whatever. We believe in you. We aren't going to beat them if you can't play them to a standstill. So at least try. I give you permission to try. I feel like D'Antoni should be doing the same thing to Clint Capella. Hey, Clint, we know they're supposed to have four All-Stars and we have two. Well, guess what? In this one stretch of time, let's see if you can't be one of the four best players on the court in these games. Because I actually think Zach, he might be able to do that for a small stretch.
I agree.
For him to win, that's what's going to have to happen.
They need him big time. I mean, I remember I was down there December, January, and it was an interesting question to them of you know, how much is he going to be able to play against the Warriors? And I think he's proven over the last 3 months he's going to be able to play a lot. But their universal response was, if and when we get there, he better be able to play a lot. Because we need the dimension that he brings of rim protection and pressure on the rim on offense, but especially rim protection. Because the Warriors, for all the threes they shoot and all the mid-rangers they shoot this year, they like to get to the rim. It's why they like to cut. It's why they like to space the floor so much, because they want cutting lanes to the rim. And he just does something that no one else on the Rockets can do. And they were like, we're going to need that for 30 minutes. To your point, I thought you made a great point on Paul guarding Durant. Because we're going to see that, even if we don't see it on purpose, we're going to see it on switches. Because they're going to run that Steph KD pick and roll.
And transition.
And they're going to switch it. And they're going to say, get up under him and annoy him. And that's why, like, I can't decide if I'm fascinated by the individual matchups in this series or, like, if they just don't matter at all because of all the switching that's going to happen. Like, I wonder how long it will take for Steph not to be guarding Chris Paul. Like, to be guarding, will they start with him on Ariza right away? Does it matter if they put him on Ariza? Will Harden just run a Harden Ariza pick and roll and attack him that way? And it's the same thing with Harden. Like, will Harden guard Klay Thompson right off the bat? Will Harden guard Draymond Green? And they'll toggle the lineup so that Ariza and Tucker have the Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant combination. Does it even matter? Like, because everyone's going to switch everything and everyone's going to target the weakest of, I don't know the, I maybe it doesn't even matter. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you made a couple of great points. I don't want to miss one thing you said that I just loved, because you said it just as an aside, but it's a super smart comment. When you talked about offensive rim pressure with Capella, that to me is so important. You've already mentioned earlier about Harden finishing at the rim, and it's not going to be easy. Draymond, like I said, is the best helper. Durant is super long. Harden sometimes he misses those shots. Westbrook, certainly a guy that normally is a pretty good finisher, couldn't finish against Utah nearly as much as he needed to. But Capella isn't just finishing, he's hammer dunking, like violently so. I laughed the other day in the Celtics game. Al Horford had that fantastic dunk, if you remember, on the lob, and people acted as if it was the greatest dunk of his career, which it might have been. And I thought, well, that's just a typical Clint Capella early second quarter dunk. Like, he does that a lot, and it doesn't matter if someone's there or not. He does provide that pressure, and he forces, like I said before, pros read the game, they don't just play the game, and you got to make them think. And so if you are checking Capella and he's in the dunk spot, you know, that short corner behind the rim, so it's the court is as spaced behind the backboard, as spaced out as it can be, you've got to think, what do I do? Because the moment you start leaning forward to leave him to do whatever, help, whether it's a cutter, whether it's helping a driver or rotate out, then Capella's there for the 13-foot dunk because he can jump to that high. So that's a really big thing. On the matchup thing, I love how you always look at that. This is the one place where between transition opportunities, which again is why I think it's important that teams shouldn't just slow it down, and with all the switches that they're likely going to do, it's going to be so fluid. What will be interesting is if a team can find, you know what, they just can't solve this one action, this one play, and then they dictate it more and more. And that's one thing. This is a really important point that I think both these teams are so good at, is when they do find that weakness, you can't do it every single play for lots of different reasons, but you can do it a lot. As opposed to, we've all watched games like, for example, the Timberwolves, when nobody can guard Carl Anthony Towns and he takes 3.5 shots. That won't happen here. If they've got a guy that clearly has an advantage, they will use it like a sledgehammer, which is why I said the opponent better adjust quickly. The agile D'Antoni needs not to panic. He needs to channel Brad Stevens and just be easygoing as much as he can be. Okay, this isn't working. Let's move on to something else, because if he's too stubborn, they'll be out of a game quickly.
The Capella thing that you brought up is fascinating because, you know, he represents the choice of, do we go five out with Tucker at center or Bamute at center if you want to get even smaller? So right. 5 3-point shooters on the floor, or five guys who at least are going to stand at right. the 3-point right. line. And it's just absolutely wide open and nobody can guard Harden one-on-one. Nobody, not anybody. Maybe Durant has a shot to challenge him from behind anyway once he gets beat.
Right.
Or do we go four out and one of our guys is in the dunker spot, you know, just outside the paint, which means there's going to be someone in James's way. And I think Houston is actually better four out. And part of that is what Capella brings on defense. Part of it is that both he and Harden have gotten better at when Harden gets down there and that center has to guard, even if it's in a teensy space and the center can literally touch both Capella and Harden with his hands. That's how close together everyone is. They've gotten better at just manipulating that space with little lobs and wraparound passes, or if the corner guy comes, Harden has gotten really good at that, like, sticks his hands out of bounds and throws that sidearm pass to the corner. They've gotten good enough at that that I think their offense is almost better that way. When it's five out, Harden, and here's the key to me, not the key, a key. When they play five out, Harden just has a tendency to get a guy switched onto him who's not even a mismatch at all. Like, it'll be Klay Thompson or something. And just dance with him and dance with him and dance with him and take a step back three. And I've said this before, like, I get that the math says that's a good shot. I just think, like, four of them in a row against actual good wing defenders who are not little and not big and not, you're not gaining any separation against them. You're going to go one of four a lot. And you're just going to sap the rhythm of the offense so badly that I just, like, that to me is a way that Houston loses the series, if that makes any sense.
It's fantastic. Obviously, you know, if they just can't make an open shot, that's a different story. But you're right. I think that if Houston, and this is not unique to Houston, again, going back to Westbrook, it's his biggest problem. I'm a big believer. You know, Quinn Snyder says that the reason why he runs the offense he runs is because he thinks guys will defend more if they feel more involved in offense. And I don't necessarily agree with that, although he's my pick for coach of the year. I think he did a fantastic job, and so I can't quibble with his success. I just don't believe that you have to do that to make guys play defense, because Houston played defense this year, and they didn't do that. But I think I look at it from the other standpoint. If it's just Harden with the ball in his hands a lot, you get to the fourth quarter, and I know how players think. They want to touch the ball. They want to have some shots up. That you'll see, watch what happens. A guy will get fouled. There's a dead ball. Somebody hasn't shot the ball in 5 minutes. He'll go get the ball and he'll shoot. And the other team knocks it out because they don't want to see it go in or not, which I think is always kind of funny. But they know this guy's trying to get his rhythm going, because it's not happening while the game's going on. He's trying to get a rhythm going or feel confident, whatever, when the game is off, right, when the whistle blows.
Yeah.
And so Harden, if he gets too one-dimensional over the course of too long, I think you're totally right. He made, I think, 97 step backs for the season. It's not, you know, I think it's triple anyone else, more or less. But if the Warriors can force him to do a lot of that, they're going to win the series. It's got to come in drips and drabs. It should not be a daily diet, in my opinion. He can play downhill. The idea of Capella playing downhill on that short roll, because if Harden gets cooking and they've got to blitz him, and like they did this, the Cavs did this against Curry in series one, right? Matchup one, I guess it was the original movie of Warriors had, right, where they were just taking, they took Curry out of the game, which is why I thought was so ridiculous that Iguodala was MVP. Curry finally realized, oh, all I have to do is hit the short roller and let Draymond make a play, but I'm drawing two guys every time on ball screens. Well, they didn't lose a game after they did that. And I think Houston can do that with Capella, but I don't know. I only think. They might. The Warriors might, in certain stretches of the game, take the ball out of Paul or Harden's hands. It's not easy to do both. Force Capella to be that quarterback on the short roll to 17 feet playing downhill. You know, he's got that Euro step. He can finish now better than he's the best he's ever been before, and he's gotten better literally since January. And if he's matched up with Draymond, he might be long enough and athletic enough to still score over Draymond, which isn't easy. And now we have a hell of a series. If they can figure out that Capella can't score enough and make a play when he's left to play 4-on-3 when they blitz the ball screen, that's another advantage Warriors, which is why I say overall I think the probability goes to the Warriors' side. They've got more margin for error, but that doesn't mean they're going – I think it's a joke to think they have to win this, because I can make easy arguments that Houston can do plenty. They're a fantastic team. It's the best team they've ever faced, the Warriors.
It's a great – that's a very interesting point about blitzing or trapping Harden and Paul. I just assumed we won't see it. It's just not a way that teams have successfully really defended the Rockets. And of course, with the Warriors, when they put Draymond at center, are very well equipped to switch everything. But it's interesting. Make Capella catch the ball 20 feet out, not 10 feet out, not 15 feet out, 20. So he's got to dribble. Make him dribble, or make PJ Tucker, who's actually a pretty good playmaker, make him make plays when they play him, when they use him as the center. It's interesting. I bet we will see that. Now that you bring it up, I bet we will see that for parts of the series. That's interesting.
It would be a mistake if they didn't try that. Like I said, you can't just – if you're going to do what everyone's always done, then you're going to get what everyone's always had done to them, which is Houston is rolling you. So it goes both ways. You've got to try different things. It took the Warriors 2 3/4 of the first series. In fact, I'm sure you've heard this story, but I texted my buddy Henry Abbott at the end of game 2 and said, the series is over. Cleveland, this was movie one. And he said, you think the Cavs, because they were up, they're about to go up 2-1. He said, you think the Cavs have got it? And I said, no, the Warriors have finally figured out what to do, and they're going to kill them from here. And he's like, you're nuts.
That's the infamous David Lee game where they brought in David Lee and what was essentially
right.
Garbage time.
David Lee was doing what Draymond didn't do. David just played downhill, made an easy play, got Barbosa on a cut, and got, I think, someone else on a corner three. And then Draymond must have realized, oh, I just have to make a simple play. I don't have to be the one that scores. And then Steph, like, oh, I just have to play 4-3 because these guys have figured it out. And they didn't cruise in every game. I think they cruised in 2. But you better make Houston do something different than what they've always done. And I know what the Rockets will counter with. They'll just spread the floor and stop setting ball screens. And now you can't double them. But that's fine. That's going to take that much more energy for him to – I remember when the Bulls first drafted Derrick Rose – and Derrick Rose had no idea what to do with a ball screen offensively, because he never needed a ball screen in high school the 1 year at Memphis. He just beat you all the time. And he could not do it in summer league. He couldn't do it to start the season. And I was at a game, and a guy said, well, why don't just ISO him every play? And I said, because he'll be exhausted. A screen makes it easier. If you can force Harden to attack one-on-one all 48 minutes or Chris Paul, they will wear out. They need to be able to use the screen to make easy plays. And so if they have to force to go ISO, that's another advantage, I think, to Golden State.
I want to wrap by saying this, because you just said you mentioned, you know, the exhaustion level of isolations and all that. You know, there are going to be a lot of people who this series is going to be a referendum on Chris Paul and James Harden. The Chris Paul part to me is nonsense. That guy has been an absolute killer in the playoffs his entire career. He's top 5 all-time in player efficiency rating in the playoffs. Everyone only remembers the meltdown against Oklahoma City. That counts. Absolutely counts. I'm not a Chris Paul apologist. That was awful. That was stupid. It was Chris Paul doing his bullshit, toying with the game like he always does, trying to draw a foul 90 feet from the rim. Counts. It counts. The Clippers meltdown against the Rockets, I don't even remember how much of a role Chris Paul played in that. It's been long enough that I remember Corey Brewer and Josh Smith and all sorts of crazy stuff. I remember Harden being on the bench. I don't remember anything about Chris Paul, which is probably a negative. I should remember something about Chris Paul. That dude, other than those two, which count, and I'm not even sure how much the other one counts, he's been a killer, man, an absolute killer. You just go back and watch, like, Hornets-Lakers from 2011 or 2012. I think it was 2011, where the Hornets are just hopelessly undermanned, have no shot. David West was hurt. That was a 2-2 series, I think, at one point. Like, he was a monster. Harden is the guy that I want to see in this series show up and play the most complete game he's ever played, because they can talk about hiding him on Draymond or hiding him on Iguodala when they play the death lineup. It doesn't matter. he's going to have to defend really good players a lot. Like you said, in transition, he's going to be on clay sometimes. He's going to be here. He's going to be there. This is why they brought Chris Paul. So you don't get tired.
That's right.
And you can give effort on defense every play. Like, to me, this isn't a referendum on James Harden. I voted him as MVP. He's the MVP this year. He's going to win. I just want to see it every minute you're on the floor. No falling asleep. No, and he was sick at the end of the Utah series, so I'll excuse that. No, like, I just give up on the perimeter and I do the John Wall reach around steal thing instead of playing real defense. I just give me complete games every time, because guess what? This team has won 2 out of the last 3 championships. They won 73 games. They win 60 every year, except this year, I guess. Like, you got to be better than you've ever been every single game.
Oh, I think you're so right. And I think that if I talked about what D'Antoni should whisper to Capella about, hey, try to be a top 4 player in the series, I think that Steve Kerr is going to write the word James Harden all over the grease board, but it's going to be for his offense. We're running pin downs against him. We're running multiple screens against him. We're going to beat him up with screens. We're going to beat up his brain with screens because we're going to make him think constantly. We're going to run a bunch of veer screens at him so he doesn't know if he should be switching or not. We are going to try to get into his skin on defense because you can't do it on offense. He's just too composed and too skilled. He might miss shots, but he's seen everything you can do defensively. But if you can scramble him up a little bit when he's guarding the other end, you will impact his offense that way. And if he melts on that end, it'll be enough, because all you have to do is find that one weak link and their offense can take advantage of it. And it's uniquely, you know, I laugh at the idea that the Rockets are built to beat the Warriors. It makes no sense to me at all. What you're saying is we built a team just so we could beat the best team we've seen the last, you know, 20 years. Okay, that makes no sense. But I will say this, the Warriors are built to kick the Rockets because the Rockets have one player that doesn't really want to focus on defense. And the Warriors lead the league in passing, and they've got 5 weapons typically on the court. So that is uniquely built to expose the other way. I still see the Warriors as having an advantage. I can easily argue if what you just said happens, Zach, what you just said is exactly what they should be talking to Harden about in Houston's locker room. James, we need you to play the best defense of your life. We don't even care what happens on offense. If you fail, here's what I'd be telling him. If you fail on offense because you're giving us all you have on defense, that's on us. Give us that. If we lose because of that, we'll take the blame. We need you to play the best defense of your life. Whatever you can do, James, to prove to everyone you're the most competitive dude we've had here. Chris Paul is incredibly competitive. Outcompete him. If you can do that, we'll take our chance to win a championship. That's the message I'd be selling if I was coaching James Harden, because too often he just says, okay, I'm going to carry us an offense. And it's not enough against Golden State.
Give me your pick. You don't have to make picks anymore, but if you are willing to make a pick, can you give me your pick, or are you going to keep it secret?
No, I mean, I like what you and Kevin talked about, but you and Brian actually talked about maybe not even doing it. I think the Warriors would take this in 7 games. I think they're built to win a game 7 on the road against the number 1 seed Rockets. That's just how I feel. But if you I like what you said. The Warriors could win in 4 and 5. The Rockets, I think, could absolutely win in 6 or 7. But I just think the Warriors have slightly more ping pong balls that come their way, and so I'd say in 7. But I think it's going to be one of the best finals we've ever seen.
Speaking of ping pong, conference finals, Coach, careful. Don't count out LeBron and the Celtics. Speaking of ping pong balls, I will be headed to the lottery on Tuesday. I'm so excited for the lottery. It's the stupidest, most absurd event in the NBA calendar, and I love every second of it. Coach, we always appreciate your time. Your insight is unparalleled, and I just love talking to you. So I know you're busy and you got family and all sorts of things going on. I appreciate you making any time for us, and you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm excited.
Yeah, I look forward to it. We'll catch up during the finals, man.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.